When shipping into a place like the UK, here's something to think about. It can pose a lot of problems if you're trying to ship directly into Amazon. So what I do is, this is the reason why it's actually great to expand internationally. And that is that if you're operating, let's say in the USA, and you want to open up your listing in the UK, the listing reviews transfer over to the UK listing as well. The other thing to think about when expanding into international territories is that I'm Matthew Fraser, and this is Amazon Ecom Secrets. I'll be sharing with you the secrets that helped me go from millions in debt to an eight-figure entrepreneur. If you're ready to escape the 9-to-5 and live life on your terms, let me show you the way. Hey guys, welcome to Amazon Ecom Secrets. My name is Matthew Fraser, a $50 million online seller. And in today's episode, I'm going to be talking about how to take your product to international markets. And not necessarily via Amazon, it could be through Shopify as well, if that's somewhere where you sell. And this is going to be so freaking powerful. This episode, do not tune out if you are already selling in any particular marketplace and you're thinking about that you want to now go to other territories. Because guys, I've done this. I've already done this exact method, and I've made mistakes, and I've had successes, and I'm going to share with you some of the tips and tricks along the way, and how I was able to do that, and what I would suggest to you. Okay, so let's just start off with, you're in Amazon USA, for example, and you're now thinking about expanding your product into another territory. First of all, which one would you even pick? Do you go to UK? Do you go to Australia? Do you go to India? Yeah, there's a number of different places. And it's all going to depend on the type of product that you sell. Okay, now I sell a healthcare product. And a healthcare product requires licensing, like medical licensing into different marketplaces. So that in itself poses barriers to entry. If you're selling a knife set, a kitchen knife set or a yoga mat set, not going to be so many barriers, right? You could just send that into any market. So let's pretend for a second that you've got a fairly generic type of product that's not going to have those types of barriers. But that said, like, you know, you could have like a children's product, and the children's product may require certain government regulatory documents in order to get through the customs or something like that, right? So you're going to have to check on that. The first thing though is I would now sell into other local territories. So if you're in the USA, the first place I'm going to go to is probably Canada, okay? Anything in North America. The next place would be Mexico. And once I dialed in that entire North American market, and when I say dialed in, I mean made it profitable. That was the first thing I would do before I even thought about going to like the UK or Australia or something like that. And when I'm in that marketplace, I'm also going to be thinking about how else can I leverage the existing distribution model that I already have? Because this also comes back to the advertising and marketing. For example, if you are selling on Amazon in USA, I would also think about selling on Shopify in USA. I would also be thinking about selling on Walmart in USA and eBay in USA. And the reason why is that when people come across your product, now it may be that a friend's got the product, or maybe you're doing Facebook ads for your product to drive traffic to your Shopify store, people are always going to default to the marketplace that they love, okay? You might be someone who shops on Amazon, but I can tell you there's a range of people who don't. I was just talking to someone last night and I said, I actually personally like shopping on eBay as well. And I think that's just because I've been using eBay for 20 years. So I just go there and I can find most things there. I also like to buy sort of sometimes secondhand things as well. But that's a place that I like to shop. Now you'll find that other people like to shop on Walmart. So what you want to do is take advantage of those platforms by being available on those platforms, okay? So you're maximizing the sales opportunity in that one territory. So why we want to capitalize on the one territory is because you're already shipping into that one territory. So by increasing your footprint within the territory, you can also increase the stock that's now going into that territory. And therefore, you can increase your orders, which will hopefully decrease the cost per unit if that's what you can negotiate with your manufacturer who may be in China, right? So you're just really capitalizing on that whole ecosystem within that one marketplace. It's not much effort to then stretch it out over to Canada and then over to Mexico in that one North American marketplace. Where would you go after that? The next place I would go would be the next biggest Western-speaking country, right, is going to be UK. That's going to be a big, big marketplace. UK, then I would consider after that Australia. Then after that, I would consider maybe branching out into parts of Europe. Once you go down the European the European pathway, it can become very, very messy. Why is it messy? Because there's just so many different languages there. Now, I already spoke about, you know, going into Mexico. Obviously, that's going to be a different language there as well. Maybe that's one you bypass. Maybe it's not. There's different things you've got to think about when you're going into places that have a different language. First thing is going to be your product itself and the instructions, for example. If your product comes with an instruction manual, this will probably be something that you didn't think of. You're going to have to put down the language of what you're talking about in your instructions. Now, there's ways to get around that. One thing you could do is obviously you just do a print form and you have all the different languages. You could have all the different languages of the whole world if you wanted to in your one instruction manual. Another way you could do is do a QR code. So the QR code goes to a website which then has all of the information on there. That one is actually quite powerful because then you could potentially try and have something on that website that can capture the customer's information so you could then remarket to them later. That would be key. So when thinking about Europe, it can be a minefield of information because you've got obviously different languages. You've also got many different territories and licensing potentially. And so those types of things you've got to think about before you go into the marketplace because I mean, even if one example, Europe loves taxes. The tax system in Europe is a freaking nightmare. One they brought up the other day, which I had to go, and when I say the other day, like maybe a year or two ago, it was about a tax now on packaging. So you now have to submit how much packaging you think you're going to be importing into a particular country, like Germany or something, and then prepay the tax on that. And that's not to mention any other types of import tax and duties that are applicable. When shipping into a place like the UK, here's something to think about. I don't ship directly into Amazon. I use a middleman, okay, and a fulfillment center. So my goods just happen to be manufactured in Australia. They're shipped from here all the way into the UK. It goes through customs. And what the customs love to, just like Australia as well, and imports, you pay in Australia, you pay GST. In the UK, you pay a VAT, which is the same thing. It's a value added tax. 20%, mind you. It's a rort over there. And it can pose a lot of problems if you're trying to ship directly into Amazon. So what I do is I don't do that. I ship into a third-party fulfillment center. They will help manage the importation of the goods. So if anything comes up, any issues, I can have them deal with customs or the shipping company. If it happens and you are sending it directly in, and I've tried this as well, if you're sending it directly into Amazon, there's no one in Amazon that you can call and say, hey, could you just call up, you know, FedEx or DHL and UK Customs and sort it out? They just don't do it. There's just no one to call. So what will end up happening is the issue doesn't get resolved and your stock could be then destroyed or sent back to the destination. And that is something that you want to avoid at all costs. So for me, it's worth the peace of mind and the efficiency of having it imported into the fulfillment center. And then from the fulfillment center, whatever I need to ship into Amazon, I ship it from within the territory. And by doing that as well, I can utilize Amazon's shipping fulfillment company now and their processes and costs, because when you deal with Amazon to go and collect the goods, it's so, so cheap. So overall, I end up winning. The other thing though too is because I'm also selling through Shopify in the UK, the fulfillment company ships those products for me. So every time I make a sale on Shopify, it goes through to the fulfillment company already in the UK and it's going to ship the goods for me there. So I'm actually utilizing two different fulfillment methods, FBA Amazon UK and my own fulfillment company in the UK as well. Why I do that across the world, not just in the UK, I split it, is I want to provide some risk mitigation, because when you ship stuff into Amazon, and perhaps you might want to get that stock back out of Amazon for whatever reason, it has happened, it's a freaking nightmare, okay? You can't just ring up Amazon and say, hey, ship out the goods. It's a real pain in the ass problem. So that's why I like to have the majority of my stock sitting in the fulfillment company and use that to drip feed into Amazon FBA if and when I need. The other thing that a lot of people don't think about internationally is currency and the currency conversions, because in the UK, you're going to be getting paid in pounds. You're going to have to report on VAT and obviously income tax. And of course, that is going to be, that's going to pose another level of complexity, because you're probably going to want to have a UK-based company. Now, when I set up my UK-based company many years ago now, I could do it quite easily. But now the government's changed the rules. And so what you need now is you need to have someone who's based in the UK who operates as a guarantor, basically, for your company. Now, you can't just ring up, you know, you're like, I have a UK accountant. They don't provide that service. They are not going to be on the hook for your company not paying taxes, okay? And that's the ultimate reason why the UK government requires someone to be on the hook for the company in the UK. Now, it's only applicable if you're a foreign person like myself. So I don't live in the UK, but I'm the director of a UK company, right? The UK government can't come and arrest me if I don't pay taxes. I'm over here in Australia, but now they've got guarantors living in the UK. They can go knock on their door and say, hey, that guy that's living in Australia that owns that company that you said you're a guarantor for, he hasn't paid his taxes. So we're going to come and see you about it. And of course, no one wants to be on the hook for that. So it can be quite difficult now to get a UK company set up.
Hey guys, I just want to break away from the episode for just one moment and let you know that I've just launched the Amazon Launchpad mini course. Now, this is designed for people who want to get started on Amazon really, really fast. But guess what? I can get you launched your first product on Amazon with just 5 hours. You just have to click on the link below, join my community, and the course is absolutely free. All right, thanks guys, and back to the episode.
Back to currency conversions. Because all of my goods are manufactured in Australia, ultimately, I have all of my income, my revenue, brought back and converted into Australian dollars. It might be because I'm going to buy the stock in Australian dollars. It might be different for you though, because most times the Chinese manufacturer, if that's where your product is manufactured, is going to want to get paid in USD, okay, in US dollars. And so if you're operating out of, let's say, the US, and you're getting paid in US dollars, maybe you don't want to convert it to Australian dollars just so that you can then reconvert it back to US dollars to then pay the Chinese supplier. So you're going to have to figure out how much money perhaps you don't want to have converted to have it sort of pass through from Amazon. Maybe you have an OFX account that you keep US dollars in and then you pay from there to your Chinese manufacturer. It's going to work out. You have to work it out based on your own cash flow, because if you're based in Australia, this is probably something that people don't talk about. If you're based in Australia, you have to ultimately have your income declared in Australia, because where else are you going to spend the money, right? So this is going to be how it works. You're making all this money in international markets. You're going to bring the money eventually back to Australia. You're going to declare the income in Australia and you're going to pay tax in Australia. Then, if you're someone who wants to grow their wealth, you may want to use the banking system, right? You want to go to the bank and say, hey, look, this is all the money that my company is making internationally. And the only way to prove that is through an Australian tax return, right? And obviously to get an Australian tax return, you have to declare income. And sure, you're going to be writing a whole bunch of things off, but you want to still have a good, healthy income in order to borrow money from the bank so that you can buy houses and cars and, you know, whatever it is. So there really is no way of getting around paying tax. I often make a joke to my accountant because I say, Paul, when am I going to start opening up the account in the Bahamas? Surely now's the time because I'm sick of paying all this tax. He's like, yeah, Matt, you can definitely open up that account in Bahamas. But the problem is you're going to have to move to the Bahamas, okay? Now, obviously, I don't want to do that. So there's no other loophole that I know of where you can live in Australia and not pay tax, okay? Ultimately, when the money comes back to Australia, because that's generally where you're going to spend it, you can do that. Now, just thinking about that, maybe you're someone who has a family, or maybe you have a location like in Dubai, for example, where you spend half the year. If that's the case, then maybe you could set up a company in Dubai, and that is now your main company where you bring in all your income, because I know Dubai has very favorable tax advantages for people who are not residents, essentially, or citizens of Dubai. That is something that you should definitely check out. Maybe speak to your accountant about, hey, should I just go and live in Dubai for most of the year so I can pay less tax in Dubai? Maybe that's something for you. Now, as you know, I have a business that is across the globe. I'm literally, let me think, in USA, Canada, not Mexico, Australia, New Zealand, Japan is an interesting one. Let's talk about Japan in a second. And Europe and the UK. That's my terror. And I have sold previously in Spain. That was a disaster. And I think the reason why that was the case, thinking about that, was because the postal system in Spain was a freaking mess. It was, and so what was happening? Oh, that's right. I was shipping products out of the UK into Spain. I was using UK as my hub, shipping into Spain. And the stock was just going missing all the time. And I remember seeing a video once that a customer had sent through to me. And what had happened was the product was delivered, and then someone just came around, just picked it up and walked off with it. And you know what? It just became way too much hassle for the theft and missing products that was going on in Spain. I said, I'll stuff it. We'll move on from Spain. I want to tell you one of the big things though that happened to me years ago. And this is when I was setting up in the UK. And so I want you to avoid this mistake. And that is that when I was selling on Amazon, I had to get category approval for my healthcare product to be able to sell on Amazon UK. And I thought, I'll just get this done myself. So you can go into Amazon, you can apply to get the category approval, which was, I think it was under medical products, and filled out the paperwork, submitted it, and it came back within like 24 hours, like declined. I was like, oh, this is rubbish. So then I reapplied again. I thought, oh, I must have just something wrong. Reapplied again, declined. I was like, come on, this can't be serious. I'm thinking I'm supplying all the correct paperwork. I then applied again and it was declined for the third time. And what I didn't know at the time though was that you can't actually apply more than three times. Once you've applied for three times and declined, that's it. You are out. I had to go through this freaking rigmarole because I had already set up that UK account in a UK company, which I just set up. So now I can't use that account. So I've just spent all this money on setting up this UK company. I now have to get rid of that company and set up a whole new UK company to start up a whole new Amazon account and then reapply for the medical category approval. But how I got around it then was I actually outsourced it. I went on to, I think it was Upwork or somewhere, and there were people there who can actually get these category approvals done for you. And I was like, far out, this is ridiculous. I paid her something like, I think it was like $2,000 or something to get this category approval sorted out. And she did, like within like 48 hours, it was done. And so my lesson is don't do the category approval yourself. Just outsource it. And I know what you're going to say. It seems like a lot of money. Like, oh, wow, it's going to be like $2,000 to get that done. Look, maybe in different categories, I know it can be cheaper, like maybe $500. But I tell you what, for the heartache and pain that it caused at the time, because not only did I then have to spend all that money on getting the UK company redone, it was the lost revenue, because now I was like weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of dicking around trying to get this account sorted out, and I was just missing out on sales. So don't do that. Don't try and be cheap like I was trying to do. But mind you, I didn't even know that person existed and I just thought I could do it myself. But now I'm going to say to you, don't be cheap. Spend the money, get it done fast, and get your Amazon account live and making sales ASAP, because ultimately you'll win in the end with that strategy. Now, guys, this is the reason why it's actually great to expand internationally. I was talking to a client last night and he didn't know this information, so I'm going to share it with you right now. And that is that if you're operating, let's say, in the USA and you want to open up your listing in the UK, did you know that the listing reviews transfer over to the UK listing as well? And at this point, your mind should be just blowing up if you didn't know that, because my client thought that if he had to go to a new territory, he had to start from zero again. And as I always say, reviews equals money. So that way you might have great sales in the USA, you might have 3,000 reviews, you then open up in the UK, your listing is going to show 3,000 reviews. So straight away, people are going to trust that product even though you haven't been in that territory before, right? And that is very, very powerful. Now, I mentioned before about the fact that I'm in Japan. Let me tell you a secret. I don't do the sales in Japan. I outsource Japan. Now, what does that mean? What I've done is I'm responsible for shipping my product into Japan, but I have another company in Japan who helps import the product. So they deal with all the customs. They also deal with Amazon, the listing creation, the language conversion, because I know absolutely nothing except for when I used to do Kyokushin karate. That's the only thing I know about Japan, okay? Apart from the fact it's also a beautiful country. But I don't know anything about selling products in Japan because it's so unique. So I've just given the whole product to someone in Japan who can essentially just take care of the whole thing for me. Now, of course, that does come with cost because they also need to make money as well. So my margin is reduced, but I don't have to deal with really anything. The other interesting thing though about shipping into Japan, which I hate, is the fact that you have to prepay your taxes on the sales, okay? So think about this. In Australia, when you make a sale, you charge GST, and at the end of the quarter, you then report the GST and pay the government whatever they're owed. In Japan, you have to nominate a value of what you're going to sell your products for. They then tell you, well, based on that, you're going to have to pay X amount of GST or tax, sales tax. And they're going to ask you to prepay that sales tax when you import the goods into Japan. So guys, maybe the opportunity for you when you're expanding into international markets is to actually outsource the sales and the local distribution to someone who's specialized in that particular area. And that's something that I've utilized now into Japan. The other thing to think about when expanding into international territories is that Amazon may require you to meet certain criteria. Now, for example, in India, I'm not in India. You have to have someone who's local in India in order to have an Amazon account and products live in India, right? Unlike me being based in Australia, I can have an Amazon account live and active in USA, in Canada, in Mexico, without having to actually live or have someone locally based in those markets. So there is a lot of nuances with each territory that you're going to have to think about before you commit to going into certain marketplaces. So Guys, I hope you found this really, really interesting into my insights into expanding across the globe. If you are someone who's an inventor, you're already selling on Amazon in a particular marketplace, or you're a brand owner, and you're thinking about scaling your business across the world, that is my specialty. That is what I've done to now $50 million across the world. So if you want to tap into some of that expertise to help you save money, to do it the right way, the most efficient way, whether that be you want me to mentor you to do that, or potentially you want me to actually just do it for you in some sort of a partnership distribution type model, then reach out to me. You'll find the details somewhere around this video. You can DM me, put a message there, or come into my community. I'd love to talk to you, and we can take things into the stratosphere. That would be awesome. I'd love to help you. Thanks for tuning into Amazon Ecom Secrets. If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to show your support is to give a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and make sure to subscribe on YouTube so you don't miss an episode. You can also find more at I'm Matthew Fraser on all social media platforms. Thanks so much. Take care.